Who just came on the line?
Mark Bartholomew.
Hi there. We're still waiting for Ms. Elworth.
Yeah, so my assistant PDF her the documents, and this may have been the, I don't know, I still don't know.
Let's wait till she comes back on the line before we talk about it. I don't want to be in an ex-party situation.
All right, no problem. You have that stack that I gave you, right? Of what, Sabrina?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just keep that together because we need to get you into the page.
Yeah.
Ms. Elworth, is that you?
Yes, it is. I apologize for being a couple of minutes late.
Oh, no problem. So where are we from DEQ's perspective?
So I've looked through, I think, the majority of the reason why I was late is I was printing out the last email chunk. But it looks like there isn't much of anything in here that I hadn't seen before.
Okay.
So I think we can go forward if you know, Mr. Bartholomew refers to something and I need to take a minute, then perhaps we can just deal with it that way.
Sure, that would be fine.
Okay.
So, and just to be clear, did you receive all 475 pages or were they pared down?
It was pared down. They're kind of numbered out of sequence, and maybe that's, I'm not sure how we want to do this procedurally.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to call it, maybe you can help tell me what you have there, Mr. Bartholomew.
Well, I just had a thought that, you know, I think we could stipulate to a new record and I could tell you what the page numbers are in it. And the page numbers are the same as what you received.
Right. How many pages are we talking about?
Well, it's still quite a few because I didn't want to miss anything. I think there are probably 100 pages, 120 pages maybe.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is after we're done today, if you could email me kind of the revised version. We're not going to change the page numbers, but just email me which portions of Exhibit R1 are actually being offered, and then I can put that into CMS so that we know what exactly is the appropriate document. Does that work for you?
Okay. That works for me.
Okay. And so, Ms. Elworth, with regard to Exhibit R1 and specifically the pages that were faxed to you, do you have any objection to that document being part of the record?
No.
Okay. Exhibit R1 with a number of pages to be determined later is admitted. And so, again, Mr. Bartholomew, I'll just have you email that to me after the hearing, if that's okay with you.
That's perfectly fine.
Okay. Okay, so let's carry on then. Opening statements, Ms. Elworth, opening.
Okay. I'm sorry, I apologize. I didn't mention earlier that I have Dan Lobato in the room with me.
I figured he was probably there with you, yeah.
Okay. I apologize. I realized I should have mentioned that at the very beginning. So, the generation, storage, treatment, transportation, and disposal of solid waste, which are hazardous waste, is governed by the Federal Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, which is commonly referred to as RCRA. The EQ adopted these regulations and is charged with enforcing RCRA in Oregon. RCRA is commonly referred to as a cradle-to-grave system and regulates solid waste from the time of generation of the solid waste until it is finally disposed of. Under RCRA, solid waste is defined broadly to include any material that is actually discarded or stored or accumulated pending disposal. There are four types of solid waste, including garbage, kind of the common meaning of that term. Waste that is intended to or actually abandoned, spent materials, and waste or residues from industrial manufacturing processes. This includes such things as sludge, dust, or filters that collect both of those things, or an ingredient in a process that is used up, unusable for its intended purposes, or the person doesn't intend to use it for its purpose. EPA has stated that its intention is to expand the common meaning of solid waste to include storing or accumulating material in lieu of disposal, and has specifically stated that the act of storage itself can produce a solid waste. Hazardous waste is a subset of the solid waste universe and includes those solid waste that are potentially dangerous either to the public health or the environment. And there's two types of hazardous waste. There's listed waste, which are produced from specific manufacturing processes or sources, and then there's characteristics waste, which are exhibit one of four characteristics, either ignitability, reactivity, and toxicity. A generator is the person who first causes the waste to be subject to regulation, which basically means that the generator makes the item a solid waste. The generator makes the item unusable or starts storing the item in a manner that does not indicate an intention to use it. The generator can generate waste by storing the item until the expiration is passed, even if they do intend to use it. It becomes a solid waste. There are three categories of generators, large quantity, small quantity, and conditionally exempt. And each category of generator must comply with the hazardous waste regulation specific to its category. The determining factor for each category is the amount of waste generated in a specific calendar month. For a large quantity generator, that amount is 2,200 pounds in any month. The generator category is determined by all of the hazardous waste that is accumulated on the property until it's disposed of. If the generator's legal responsibility to determine if a solid waste is a hazardous waste, and the generator does so by either conducting a hazardous waste determination or through knowing what generated the waste. That said, the act of determining if a solid waste is a hazardous waste does not make the waste a hazardous waste. A waste is a hazardous waste at the time it becomes a solid waste, and it's subject to RCRA regulations at that time. In other words, a generator cannot shield itself from RCRA's storage, transportation, and disposal requirements by failing to learn the characteristics of the waste. EPA has specifically stated that such an interpretation would create a loophole in the protections that RCRA is intended to provide by allowing generators to ignore their waste indefinitely. Additionally, if a chemical is stored in a manufacturing unit, a storage tank, or other processing equipment, if the chemical remains in the processing unit for more than 90 days after the unit ceases to be operated, the chemical becomes a solid waste. EPA argued that once someone stopped operating a manufacturing unit or a tank or, you know, processing equipment, they usually lose the incentive to maintain that manufacturing unit, thus increasing the possibility of failures and releases. A large quantity generator can store waste on site for a period of up to 90 days after the waste is generated, meaning 90 days after the waste is subject to regulation or it becomes a solid waste, meaning it's not used or is not usable, or the generator does not intend to use it. A large quantity generator must also apply for an EPA ID number from DEQ, file annual reports, and pay fees prior to March of each year until the waste is disposed of. The evidence in this case will show that the violations alleged in DEQ's amended notice is issued in September of this year are supported by the evidence in the record and should be upheld by the administrative law judge. General Property Group purchased the property in November 2015, which had previously been used as a metal plating business. Up until the time of the sale, the prior owner operated a plating shop and or managed the chemicals in a manner so that they could be used in a plating operation. Respondent was well aware that the hazardous materials were present in the building when it purchased the property. Unused chemicals were stored in large vats and tanks. And additionally, the sale documents state that there were hazardous materials located on the property. At the time of the purchase, respondent had the electrical and water service shut off at the building. Respondent was not actively using any of the chemicals or processing equipment, and nor did it have any intention of operating a plating business. Pictures and testimony will show that the chemicals stored at the property were no longer usable and had ceased to be used when respondent purchased the property. Respondent had no intention of using those chemicals and did not treat the chemicals as product or as having any value. In fact, some of the chemicals had spilled onto the floor. Thus, General Property Group was storing those waste in lieu of disposing them and subject the chemicals to regulation under RCRA. ORS 466-0951A prohibits anyone from storing hazardous waste unless they either have a permit or are a generator. And if the person is a generator of the waste, they can store the waste for a period of time set forth in DEQ's rules. As stated before, a large quantity generator can store waste for a period of 90 days. Additionally, hazardous waste can be stored in unoperated manufacturing and processing equipment for 90 days. When respondents stored the hazardous waste in lieu of disposal, it essentially turned those chemicals into a solid waste, thus generating the waste by making it subject to RCRA regulations. The evidence today will also show that respondent failed to comply with the final order of the commission. In August 2016, DEQ issued a remedial action order regarding the waste stored at the property. After allowing several extensions, General Property Group was required to dispose of all the waste, whether it was hazardous or otherwise, prior to December 9, 2016, and submit documentation for that disposal to DEQ within 30 days of the disposal. The waste was transported for disposal in January and February of 2017, and reached disposal facility in March of 2017. DEQ did not receive documentation of disposal of some of that waste until November 2017. Thus, General Property Group failed to comply with the final order. Finally, as the generator of the waste, General Property Group was required to file an annual report with DEQ prior to March 1st of the year after it generated the waste. They did not file a report until February 2018, even though, as previously explained, it generated the hazardous waste by making it subject to RCRA when it purchased the property in November of 2015, or shortly then after when General Property Group began storing the waste in lieu of disposing of it. For those reasons, DEQ's amended notice should be upheld.
Thank you. Mr. Bartholomew?
I'm going to waive opening.
Okay. Call you first, Ms. Elworth.
Okay. I'll call Dan Lovato.
Mr. Lovato, can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to briefly raise your right hand as I swear you in, please. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give in this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
State your full name. Spell the last, please.
Danny R. Lobato, L-O-B-A-T-O.
Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Elworth.
Can you drop the number of years you've been in?
I'm a hazardous waste compliance inspector and have been in this job for 23 years.
And can you briefly describe what your job duties are?
My duties are to investigate, doing compliance inspections and document and review to see if the compliance with the hazardous waste laws, including RCRA, as adopted by the DEQ regulations, are complied with.
And can you just generally explain what a solid waste is under RCRA?
I think you did a really good job of it in your introduction, but a solid waste is a very large, it encompasses just about everything that can be or is abandoned, disposed of, spent materials or residue in manufacturing processes.
And how do you determine if a solid waste is a hazardous waste?
You do a hazardous waste determination, and the material can either, and that can be done through analytical knowledge of process or a combination thereof, and it would be a hazardous waste if it was characteristic, as you explained, ignitable, corrosive, toxic, or reactive, or listed in the regulations coming from a certain source or specific operation.
So RCRA doesn't regulate all chemicals, but only those that are considered to be solid waste. Can you explain kind of what the term generated means?
Generated means when a hazardous waste or a chemical is no longer used for its intended purpose or has exceeded its useful life.
And who is the generator?
The generator would be the person who has control or ownership over the waste material.
And when is a generator considered a large quantity generator?
A generator who generates more than 2,200 pounds of hazardous waste in a calendar month or stores in excess of 13,200 pounds of hazardous waste at any one time.
And how long can a large quantity generator store hazardous waste at its facility?
A large quantity generator can store hazardous waste for up to 90 days.
In August of 2016, did you conduct an inspection at a property with the address of 702 Great Street in Medford?
I did.
And why did you decide to inspect this facility in 2016?
DEQ received a complaint from the city of Medford regarding possible plating chemicals being mismanaged or left in place or possibly even disposed down a sewer system. Since the business has been closed since November 2015 and the city had tried to access the property to confirm or deny those allegations and was unable to get access to the facility.
And is Exhibit A3 a copy of a complaint that DEQ received from the city?
Yes.
Okay. And following your inspection in August of 2016, did you draft a memo that summarized your what you saw at the property?
Yes, I did.
And just to make it easy for everybody, that's Exhibit A6. And is one of the attachments to this memo some sale documentation you received from the city? Sorry, I'm flipping through pages. I apologize.
Yes, yes, that is.
And what did you discover during your inspection?
I found that there were various chemicals inside the facility that were plating chemicals inside the facility that were inside vats and tanks. There were large poly containers that also contained chemicals. There were smaller containers in a chemical storage area that also contained chemicals. The power was off at the facility, and it appeared that no one had been using the chemicals for quite some period of time.
And what was the condition of, like, the various chemicals at the facility?
There was one container that was leaking in the chemical storage area. Had a black stain on the concrete, and there were several other containers that were very difficult to read the contents due to the age of the container, the vats were, they'd been used for a number of years, so they were in, they were kind of rusty, and I had some concern about the integrity of those containers as well.
And you mentioned that the power was off of the facility. How did that impact any of the chemicals there?
To perform plating operations, the chemicals that are used in the plating operations need to be heated and in a constant temperature, or they lose their ability to perform the plating.
And In your opinion, did the condition of the various chemicals at the property indicate any intention of using any of those chemicals?
No.
And did you take pictures during your August inspection?
I did.
And are those attached to Exhibit A6?
Yes.
Okay. Was anyone else present during the inspection?
Yes, Scott Piper with SMATH Environmental introduced me as being the representative for GP, or introduced himself as being a representative for GP Group during that inspection.
And did he tell you why he was there?
Yes, he said he was there to help General Property Group dispose of the chemicals as they didn't intend to use the plating shop.
And based on your inspection and your knowledge of the hazardous waste regulations, was there hazardous waste stored at the property?
Yes.
And in September 2016, did you receive sample results that confirmed that your opinion from SMATH?
Yes, I did.
And that's Exhibit 7?
Yes.
Did you also receive an inventory of the amount of waste that was stored at the property around that same time?
Yes, I did.
And that's Exhibit 8. And after your inspection in August of 2016, did you have a conversation with the previous owner of this property?
I did.
And what was the gist of the conversation that you had with them regarding the various chemicals that were stored at the property?
Well, I initially sent him a pre-enforcement notice alleging that he was storing the chemicals, and he was able to produce documents showing that he had operated the facility up until the sale date of November 2015. He had also showed me a sales contract where he had sold the business to a person who operated it as a plating shop and then defaulted on the loan, and so he had to take it back, and he was doing small plating jobs himself, and so I went through the pre-enforcement notice.
And so he wouldn't have been considered a generator because he was still using the chemical?
Correct.
And why would General Property Group be considered the generator of the hazardous waste?
Because they didn't, it appeared they didn't intend to use the chemicals as a plating shop.
And what would you consider the date of generation of that waste to be?
November, the date of the sale, November 2015.
And why is that?
Because the power was turned off, and which basically made the vats not able to maintain the temperature of the chemicals that needed to be maintained to do the plating.
Did General Property Group register with the EPA as a large quantity hazardous waste generator?
Yes.
And that registration is Exhibit A9. And the registration shows like what types of hazardous waste they generate, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, and does DEQ's regulations require annual reports for hazardous waste generators?
They do.
And when is a generator required to file that report?
They're required to file them by March of the following year, after a full year of generation.
So in terms of this particular situation, what they would have been required to file a report by March of 2016.
Correct.
Okay. In August of 2016, after your inspection report, did the EQ issue a remedial action order to General Property Group?
Yes.
And that's Exhibit A10. Mm-hmm. And just generally, did the order require General Property Group to submit a plan to DEQ of how they intended to dispose of the waste?
Yes.
And then actually to dispose of it?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Sorry.
Did you repeat the question?
Yes. Did the order require General Property Group to dispose of all of the waste at the property?
Yes, it did.
And then that included both solid waste and hazardous waste?
That is correct.
And then to provide documentation of that disposal of DEQ?
Yes.
Within 30 days?
Yes.
After disposal? Exhibit A12, does that accurately reflect what generally the order required people to do?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And did DEQ provide an extension to General Property Group to submit the plan for disposal?
Yes.
And then we actually approved that plan on November, I'm looking at my notes, November 1st, 2016.
Yes.
Which is set forth in Exhibit A14. And did DEQ approve a So they would have been required to, let's see, we approved the plan on October 27th, so they would have had 30 days from October 27th to do the disposal, correct?
Correct.
And did we provide an extension for that compliance date to December 9th, 2016?
Yes.
And when did you receive copies of manifests showing that the hazardous waste had been disposed of?
In March of 2017.
Okay. And a review of those copies of those manifests show that the table listed on page 3 of the amended notice accurately reflects what was disposed of?
Yes.
And how much waste did they dispose of?
They disposed of approximately 24,000 pounds.
And how do you know that, I guess?
Manifests are required to report the gallons shipped and disposed of or the poundage of the waste disposed of.
And say we're looking at, this is at A16, and the first manifest is the last three digits are 389. Can you explain, I guess, a little bit about what the manifest means?
Sure. The item 9, box 9, it's hazardous materials, and you'll see the description, the DO description next to that. As for example, the first one is waste carbon activated. It shows that one container was storing 62 pounds of waste code D001, which is ignitable waste.
So which page are you on?
I'm
not sure where we are.
It's exhibit A16, and it's the first hazardous waste manifest that is in that exhibit. I believe it's probably going to be page 3 on yours because there are some blank pages on mine. And it's the last three digits in the right-hand corner of that manifest are 389.
Okay. So, and for the record, as I have paginated things, that's exhibit A16, page 3.
Okay.
And just to verify, this is where it says, for the generator, it says Dennis Carroll on behalf of General Property Group. Is that the one we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
And because they disposed of approximately 24,000 pounds of waste, what type of generator would that make, General Property Group?
They would be a large quantity generator.
And did General Property Group or any other owner of this property in Medford ever have a permit to store, treat, or dispose of hazardous waste?
No.
And without a storage permit and as a large quantity generator, how long would General Property Group be able to store hazardous waste at the property?
90 days from the date of generation. So November 2015 until February 2016.
And on April 11, 2017, did you draft a memo to the file regarding the compliance status under the remedial action order of General Property Group?
Yes.
And this is exhibit A17. And at that time in April of 2017, had you received all the documentation required under the remedial action order?
No.
What were you still missing?
I was still missing the disposal records for the non-hazardous waste that had been accumulated at the facility.
And when did you receive documentation of that disposal?
November 2017.
And is that in exhibit A18?
Yes.
And when was that waste actually disposed of?
The invoices show the disposal dates as being January and February of 2017.
Okay. Thank you. And in July of 2017, did you contact various different waste disposal companies to make an estimate of what it would cost to both characterize and transport and dispose of the waste stored at the facility?
Yes, I did.
And are those estimates set forth in Exhibit A-19?
Yes, they are.
I don't have any other questions.
Cross-examination, Mr. Bartholomew.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Lovato.
Good morning.
So you mentioned that you sent a pre-enforcement notice to someone regarding this property in the past?
Yes.
Is that in the record, Ms. Elworth?
No.
Who did you send the pre-enforcement notice to?
It was to the previous owner of the property before General Property Group bought it.
What was that owner's name?
Let's see. It should be. Stephen McGahey.
When did you
Can you spell the last name, please?
McGahey.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Mr. Bartholomew.
When did you send that notice?
Oh, boy. That was after I started the enforcement action, after I sent the pre-enforcement, about roughly around the same time I sent the pre-enforcement notice to General Property Group. I don't have it in front of me right now.
You're saying you sent a pre-enforcement notice to the prior owner and General Property right around the same time?
Pretty close to the same time. I think it was a little bit, I had a little bit harder time finding an address for him. He was living in Bend at the time.
And you mentioned you canceled the pre-enforcement notice?
I withdrew the pre-enforcement notice, yes.
The reasons for that being what?
That he was able to demonstrate that he operated the, or someone he had sold the property to, operated the plating shop up until the November sale date, 2015 sale date.
So, Ms. Elworth, is anything in the records to substantiate that?
Mr. Lovato's testimony.
Okay. So the pictures that are in the record are, I've got all kinds of sheets in front of me. Okay, so in the state's record, it's A6. Did you take those photos?
I did.
And No.
Let me back up. I was there with Craig Phillip out of my office, and he actually took the photos. I told him to take them up.
Okay. So do they accurately reflect what you saw from your recollection?
Yes.
And you testified that it looked like they hadn't been used for quite a while. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. I don't have anything further for you, Mr. Lobato. Thank you.
Mr. Lobato, let me just look for a minute and see if I have any questions. Just a moment. So, and I'm going to ask you a couple questions, and this probably shows my lack of knowledge about hazardous waste more than anything, but I just want to be clear. So the distinction between Mr. McGehee when he had the facility and when GPG has the facility, and the reason that the pen was withdrawn is because he was operating the business, so he wasn't a generator. Is that a fair statement?
No, he would still be a generator, but he would have been a conditionally exempt generator. In that type of a business, they dispose of very little because of the cost of those chemicals. So what they do is they will add new chemicals to the existing batch of chemicals to freshen it up, if you will. And so he still would be a generator. He just wouldn't be a fully regulated generator, such as a small quantity or a large quantity.
Okay. But the fact that he was conditionally exempt meant that there really wasn't any penalty attached to his use or his generating of the chemicals at that point. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess I want to ask a question just in general about that. When you're dealing with, particularly with hazardous waste, and you come upon a situation like the city of Medford presented to you, do you kind of start off with a scattergun approach, basically looking at anybody that has had ownership or control over that to determine who might be responsible? Is that why Mr. McGehee would have been brought into this thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that kind of falls to the that kind of the owner's responsible for the property. So one of my first steps is to find out who actually owns the property. And
sure.
Even if there was somebody, and I knew there was a sale done by the document that the city gave me.
Okay. Okay. I think that's all the questions I have. Any redirect, Ms. Elworth?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Mr. Bartholomew, the couple questions I asked, did those raise anything for you?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lobato. Any further witnesses, Ms. Elworth?
No.
Okay. Looks like we're in your case, Mr. Bartholomew. Did you have witnesses you intended to call?
Yeah, I'd like to call Patricia Curtin.
Ms. Curtin, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to briefly raise your right hand as I swear you in. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give in this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
State your full name for the record, please.
Patricia Curtin.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Bartholomew.
Okay. So, Patricia, what is your role at General Property?
I'm a member of General Property Group.
Okay. And what is a member?
An owner. A member is, when it's an LLC, it's just an executive company.
Maybe you should speak up a little bit.
Okay. I'm sorry.
And so are there any other members?
Yes, Kevin Curtin, my brother.
He's your what?
My brother.
Okay. And can you verify just simply because I don't think I need to point to a specific page in the record we submitted, but some of the correspondence in there is between you and DEQ or the environmental experts, and some is from Kevin. What is Kevin's email address?
It's oropc@hotmail.com.
Thank you.
Could you do that again, please? OPROPC
at hotmail.com.
When did you purchase the property?
It was November 3rd of 2015.
And how much was it?
$145,000.
Did you see the, I'm just going to call it a disclaimer, but did you see the disclaimer in the sales agreement about hazardous material?
Yes.
And what did you think about that?
I didn't really know what to think about it.
Have you ever dealt with any sort of environmental enforcement or alleged environmental infractions in the past?
No, I have not.
What did you do in response to that caveat in the sales agreement after you purchased the property?
Well, we contact.
Sure. Yeah, sorry, we were conferring.
Excuse me just for a moment. You can certainly take time to confer, but I want it very clear that you're conferring because I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but especially with a telephone hearing, it's very hard to know kind of what's going on. So I don't want there to be any, once a question is asked, I want it answered without further conference, unless somebody says they want to actually take that time. Okay, I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but I don't want those kind of gaps in there. Go ahead, answer the question.
Okay, so first we contacted Nielsen Research Laboratories because we didn't know what, if anything, needed to be done. So we started with the local lab. They do all sorts of testing in this area, and I just wanted to kind of get an idea of, you know, what if anything needed to be done. So of course we didn't know what anything was there at the property. So when I called them, their response was, "We don't have a what is it machine," and that was pretty much. That was pretty much their response. So we then hired John Early from Western States Environmental, a consultant, and was hoping maybe he could give us some insight as to what we needed to do, if anything. You know, we didn't know if the stuff needed to go to the dump or, you know, we had no idea. So we hired him. We pretty much were gouged right from the beginning with this. He gave us it was June. June of 2016 when we were working with John Early, and as I said, we were pretty much gouged right from the beginning. He had tried to tell us it would cost $22,000 just to find out what was in the tanks. What was there. So, you know, we got a later bid that was a third of that for the testing.
So when did you first contact Nielsen?
It was by phone, so I'm not sure exactly when it was, but it was definitely before June of 2016. I'm guessing April.
Okay. And do you have an idea when you first contacted John Early?
It was probably May because we actually started getting going on it in June.
I'm looking now for emails from, if you give me a moment, we're just looking in our revised record. We just have some emails from John Early.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so I'm going to point out our record, page 6, and that's one that Ms. Elworth has as well. And Patricia,
Can you summarize what's on page 6 in terms of correspondence?
That was basically an email correspondence with John Early, getting a schedule of fees organized and signed in order to have him start work on, giving us some consulting.
And what is John Early's occupation, generally?
He's an environmental scientist. They do environmental consulting in the area.
And did you contact both Nielsen and John Early before ever hearing from DEQ?
Yes, I did. Yes.
At what point did you hear from DEQ?
It was July 11th, 2016. We received an email from Mr. Lovato.
Okay. And what did you do in response to that email?
We responded on July 13, 2016, that we could meet him at the property. He had emailed us requesting an inspection. We emailed him the next day on the 13th, that we could meet him the coming Monday at the property, and that would be the 18th. He was not available. He said his schedule wouldn't permit him to do that, but we did want to meet him there on Monday the 18th.
So after that, did you proceed to hire consultants and correspond with DEQ in an effort to get this problem solved?
We did. We hired a different consultant who met Mr. Lovato at the property, and we continued to work with this consultant for the beginning of the process.
And who was that consultant?
Scott Piper. At SMAS Environmental.
And then it appears that you had an extension request in December of 2016. And what led to that request?
So the disposal company that we hired couldn't do it until January. We were pretty much at their mercy. There are not a lot of disposal companies, certainly none in our area. They had to come from Portland. So we're pretty much at their mercy with regard to time frame.
Did you change environmental consultants around this time as well?
We did. We actually changed disposal companies at this time.
And what was part of the reason you for that change?
So the SNAF had recommended we use NRC, and they, again, like I said, we were continually given it just ridiculous bids. They had tried to charge us $60,000 to dispose of the waste, and so we thought it prudent to get other bids. Seeing a $60,000 bid is a little bit of a shock. So we ended up going with a different contractor for the disposal. It was half the price.
So did some of your bid shopping lead to delays?
Possibly. I mean, it's a very expensive process. We had to do our due diligence. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to come up with that kind of money.
How much money did you spend in total, soup to nuts, on this? And I'm not counting attorney fees.
It was $40,000, just over $40,000, about $41,000.
About $41,000?
Yeah.
And how did you pay for this?
We sold what we could, borrowed what we could.
So did you have to scrap to
get it together? It was not easy.
Say it's been a hardship?
It's been an extreme hardship.
I want to take you back to when you first viewed the property prior to purchasing it.
Yes.
Do you know when that date was?
That was on 4/10 of 2015.
How do you know that?
I have a picture of me in the building when I was viewing the property.
Okay. And I want to
time stamp, date stamp and time stamp.
I want to be upfront and point out that picture is not in the record, so this is just my client's.
That's not a problem. Go ahead.
And can you tell me what the property looked like at that point when you viewed the property?
It looked the same as it looked when Mr. Lobato saw it. It was obviously not in use. It was vacant. In fact, the realtor listed it as vacant. I don't believe there was any power on. We had the doors open for light. In fact, I can see in the picture we had one of the doors open so that we could see. It was, you know, dusty, cobwebby. It was clearly, you know, a vacant building. There was no sign of any activity there.
And was there any leaking substances on the floor?
Yes, there was. In the chemical room, there was a substance leaking over the concrete floor, like a dark substance.
And then, so how do you, I'm going to refer back to the state's exhibits, the pictures that I asked Mr. Lobato about prior.
Yes.
How does the appearance of the property when you first viewed it, which was about 7 months before you actually bought it, how did those pictures compare to the way it looked when you viewed it the property originally?
It looked the same. On April 10th of 2015, when I first viewed the property, it looked the same as in those pictures.
Can you tell me how it looked when you actually purchased the property?
It looked the same. It looked exactly the same.
Okay. Did you know what any of the materials were?
I did not, no.
Do you have a background in science or chemistry?
I do not.
Did you purchase the property or the business or both? Sorry about that being a compound question.
Just the property.
Okay. So you did not purchase the business.
We did not purchase the business.
And the sales agreement says something about all equipment is included in the sale. Did you request for that line item to be in there?
Yeah, there was there were some tools like a bench sander and a couple of hand tools left there.
Is that what you meant by equipment?
Yes.
Did you have any intention to purchase the chemicals or any of that leftover stuff?
No.
And did you inquire either with the owner or the realtor prior to purchasing about them moving all of this junk, I'm going to call it hazardous waste, solid waste, whatever it was?
They made it clear they were just walking away from it.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
Cross-examination?
I don't believe so.
Okay. I have a couple questions for you, Ms. Curtin.
Yes.
First of all, how long have you been one of the members of the LLC?
Whatever. I don't know, a year or so.
Okay. Were you an original member of the LLC?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, can you give me an idea when you became a member?
I don't have the documents with me, but I'm thinking summer of 2017, July of 2017.
Okay. So is it just you and your brother that are the members?
Yes.
Okay. So before July of 2017, Was he the sole member of the LLC?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, and now before that, you're apparently a real estate agent?
Yes.
Or have been? And in fact, yes. Were you the purchaser's agent in this real estate transaction?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just wondering in terms of, how experienced are you as a real estate agent?
I'm fairly experienced. I've been in the business for several years.
Okay. And do you do commercial or do you do residential or both?
Both.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is because I was wondering, as a commercial real estate agent or broker, whatever the term they use now is, I would think you might have received some training concerning hazardous materials or the possibility of some of the things like, you know, underground storage tanks, et cetera, that can be a nightmare for potential purchasers. Have you had any training on that stuff?
No, and we don't, you know, as realtors, we don't receive training like that, and it doesn't seem to come up very much. I've not seen it come up in my office.
So even in commercial transactions, you don't find, for instance, purchasers wanting to make sure there was a phase one kind of analysis of the property before purchasing it?
No.
Okay, just a minute. So I am a little confused because you've been talking about being on the property in April of 15, and you've kind of you've kind of used the inclusive "we purchased the property, etc." I'm just wondering, are you sure you've only been a member of the LLC for the last year or so?
Yeah, but I, you know, it's my brother, so.
Sure.
Viewed the property on 4/10/2015. So, I mean, that's the day we went to view it, and my brother was with me. The other realtor was with me.
Okay.
You know, I've clearly been involved in everything.
Okay. And there's a document, it's Exhibit A5 in the record, and it's a letter to the Medford City Attorney's Office from your brother. And it, essentially, it's dated June 14th, but it's in response to a June 8th letter, apparently, from the city of Medford. Was that kind of what led you to go to Mr. Early? Since that the conversations with Mr. Early were about a week later?
I don't, let's see. I'm just looking at this document. And I don't really know. I mean, it was at the same time, but we were in the process before that. I know that I contacted Nielsen before that. Just don't.
As far as your real estate practice, are you generally up in the Portland area or are you in Medford?
No, Medford and Grants Pass.
Okay. And then is your brother, is he up in the Portland area?
Yes.
Okay, because I noticed that the LLC's address was, I think, in Lake Oswego or something like that.
Yes.
Okay. And let me just check and see if I have any other questions for you. I think those are all the questions I have. Mr. Bartholomew, questions that I've asked, do they raise anything for you?
No.
And Elworth, did my questions cause you to have any further questions for the witness?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Curtin. I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Further witnesses, Mr. Bartholomew? I assume not.
No.
Okay. So I have, a question for both sides here. Obviously, I don't have that final group of documents that Mr. Bartholomew is going to send to me, or at least I don't have them narrowed down. I obviously have them I have the larger group here. Do we want to argue this orally right now, or do the two sides want to offer written closing arguments? Ms. Elworth, do you have a position on that?
I could do either. I'm not feeling strongly one way or the other.
Okay. Mr. Bartholomew, do you have a position on that?
Well, I have a question, if I may. If we did oral closing arguments right now, what's the process for that? Is it like a criminal trial or even a civil trial where the state goes first and then we go and state gets rebuttal?
Yeah, I mean, it would be just, very straightforward. Ms. Elworth would provide her argument, you would provide yours, and then because they have the burden of proof, the analogy you just used of the state is absolutely correct, she would have the final word, if any, at that point.
Okay.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
My preference would be to just do an oral closing right now.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you don't carry the way, Ms. Elworth, so let's just go ahead and do that. You want to present your argument, Ms. Elworth?
Sure. So the evidence in this case shows that the violation alleged in DEQ's amended notice are supported by the evidence in the record and should be upheld by the administrative law judge. DEQ alleged four violations, the first which was storing hazardous waste without a permit. ORS 466.095 prohibits anyone from storing hazardous waste unless they either have a permit or are a generator, in which case they would be allowed to store waste for the period of time set forth in DEQ's rules applicable to that particular generator. As a large quantity generator of hazardous waste who does not have a hazardous waste storage or disposal permit, General Property Group would only been allowed to store that hazardous waste for 90 days. The evidence shows that they stored that waste for more than 90 days, specifically from November 2015 until approximately March 2017. Additionally, respondent violated a final order of the department by failing to comply with the remedial action order. Specifically, General Property Group failed to submit to DEQ all of the hazardous waste manifests documenting the removal and transportation of the hazardous waste within 30 days of the transportation of that waste. Additionally, they failed to complete the work in their approved plan prior to December 9th of 2016, which was the date that DEQ had extended that compliance date to. And they didn't provide documentation of the disposal of the non-hazardous waste from the facility until November of 2017, which was more than 30 days from when it was disposed. Thirdly, respondent failed to store the hazardous waste in containers that were handled or stored in a manner to prevent leaking. As the evidence shows, there was at least one container was leaking and several others were in a deteriorated condition that could have resulted in a leak.
If I can ask a question about that one, Ms. Elworth, just a question on that one. If I accept as accurate Ms. Curtin's testimony that when she was there previously that there was already apparently some sort of a leak, does that change any responsibility that GPG would have, or is that something that would be still a responsibility of theirs to, I guess, make sure that the things were stored properly?
They would still be responsible for ensuring that those that the waste was stored in a manner that prevented leaking. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, that responsibility travels to the owner of the facility. Finally, they failed to submit an annual report to the department prior to March 1st, 2017. As previously alleged, they could store that waste until February of 2016, which then would have been generated then, so they would have had to submit a report and pay fees by March 1st. DEQ assessed one civil penalty for the four violations for that for storing hazardous waste. We allege that the magnitude of the violation was major because they stored more than 330 pounds of hazardous waste, and that's the magnitude is determined by looking at DEQ's rules in Division 12. As the manifest shows that are in the record, there was approximately 24,000 pounds of hazardous waste that was stored and ultimately disposed of. DEQ also alleged that the violation was ongoing for a period of more than 28 days, as it occurred from, at a minimum, 90 days after respondent took ownership of the property, which was in February 2016, until the waste was disposed of in 2017. As a generator, the general property group would have 90 days to store the waste. Additionally, the DEQ alleged a mental state of 2, which is constructive knowledge or reasonably should have known of the requirement. Prior to purchasing the property, general property group knew that there was hazardous substances stored at the property, and they reasonably should have known that at that time they should have been starting to do some work into figuring out what to do with those chemicals, especially since they had no intention of ever using the chemicals as a product. Ultimately, you know, whether or not they knew that they were hazardous waste, whether they knew that they had to be stored correctly, whether or not they knew that they had to be disposed of correctly, really only goes to the mental state, as it's been well established that hazardous waste violations are strict liability. For the C factor, DEQ alleged a C factor of -3. As general property group made reasonable efforts to minimize the effects of the violation as they ultimately disposed of all that hazardous waste in January and February of 2017. Finally, the evidence in the record, as I mentioned earlier, the ED factor, Mr. Lovato got estimates on what it would cost to both characterize and dispose of that waste. And the ED factor is basically taking those estimates and running it through the EPA Venn computer model. As I mentioned, the ED that's set forth in our amended exhibit shows a dollar figure of $617. Based on what the Venn model would now produce for an ED factor, that would actually be what is set forth in DEQ's Exhibit A1, which I believe is $366. So that does reduce that factor a little bit.
So, and I guess I'll just ask this question. Mr. Bartholomew, without, you know, indicating that you agree with any of this, in terms of if I get to an EB factor, do you agree that that number is the correct number as opposed to the 617?
We're certainly not opposed to a lower EB.
Okay. And what was the number again, Ms. Elworth? 366, is that what you said?
Yes, I believe that's right. Let me just double check in that exhibit. That's what my note says, but yes, $366.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Elworth?
No, that's all.
Okay. Mr. Bartholomew?
All right. I'm going to apologize ahead of time. I may have some pauses in here because as I go, I've written things down, and I've got my bridge copy of the record. I have the notes I made on paper. I have the notes I typed out. I've got two laptops on the table and generally just a mess. So I'll try to be as eloquent as possible, but I may fail in that at times. So when my client first advised me of the hot water they were in here with DEQ, I thought this whole situation seemed pretty unfair. Unfair due to the exorbitant cost of the remediation, the experts, Holloway to clean up everything, and then the impending alleged violations from DEQ and the potential for fines stemming from that. I think the original allegation was original proposed assessment was $29,000, and that's been revised, but it's still quite high. And I thought, well, you know, oftentimes in my profession, I run into things that are not fair, but that's just the way they are. But as I looked into this further, I felt perhaps the chance of vindication here, because I don't think that it should be unfair, and I don't think that it is unfair. And the reason for that is that I don't think they're liable at all as a matter of law. And the reason for that is the allegation is storage in excess of 90 days in violation of specifically OAR 340-100-0002, which adopts 40 CFR 262.34A. That's where we get the 90 days. And it says in that accumulation time, except as provided in paragraph B, E, and F, which are irrelevant for purposes of my statement here, a generator may accumulate hazardous waste on site for 90 days or less without a permit. Generators, further defined as any person by site whose act or process produces hazardous waste identified or listed in Part 261 of this chapter, or whose act first causes a hazardous waste to become subject to regulation. I don't think anybody here is alleging that General Property Group is the producer of this. The focus in Ms. Elworth's opening statement, as well as Mr. Lobato's testimony, is that they were the one whose act first caused this to become hazardous waste subject to regulation. The allegation is that their act caused it by storage, and their act was inaction. However, it must be the person whose act first causes it to become hazardous waste in order for them to be a generator and therefore in violation of this. It became hazardous waste due to abandonment earlier. I'm going to go back to the OAR, OAR 340-100-10-2T, defines hazardous waste as described in 40 CFR 261.3. Which then defines hazardous waste as solid waste, and I'm just going to paraphrase, that's harmful. Solid waste is defined in 40 CFR 261.2 as any discarded material. Discarded material is material which is abandoned, and it goes on to say that items may be considered abandoned by being accumulated or stored. So the material at issue here is clearly solid waste by virtue of it being discarded material and discarded by virtue of it being abandoned. It remained a business. It was not a business for a long time before the sale. The business ceased in 2014, according to evidence in the record, that evidence being from the complainant, the City of Medford, in its complaint to Mr. Lobato. Says it ceased in 2014. I think the city would be in a uniquely good position to know when the business ceased operation, because clearly from that correspondence, the city had some sort of waste disposal permit, some sort of regulatory authority over the prior business. And so the city's statement is they closed in 2014. That is you know, at a bare minimum, 11 months before my client purchased the property. Furthermore, the testimony of my client from approximately 7 months before the property was purchased stated that there was leakage on the floor, which constitutes discarded material. It had cobwebs. It was clearly abandoned. No one was doing anything there. I think when you go into an old industrial building like that, and no one's doing any work there, it's pretty obvious. And Ms. Curtin testified that the property looked essentially the same then as it did when she purchased it, or when the LLC purchased it, as well as when Mr. Lovato and Mr. Piper inspected the property. It's a cobwebby, old, abandoned. I think that when viewing the pictures, that's very evident that this is these are items that have long since fallen into dereliction and desuetude. It's just not a place that's being used. So our contention, and I think the evidence clearly supports it, is that the hazardous waste became subject to regulation at the point that it was abandoned, and that was significantly prior to my client's purchase of the property. I found a case on point, and I'm going to direct you to, I'll tell you the citation for it. It's 277 F3rd 734. It's a 2001 case out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, United States versus Sims Brothers Construction Incorporated. And I think this is a highly analogous situation, and I consider it directly on point. In that case, Albertsons, the grocery store company, purchased property, I think, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, for a store. And in the process of site work, excavation, et cetera, some canisters of what turned out to be hazardous waste were discovered. And the court stated Albertsons is not a generator because the canisters were already hazardous waste when Albertsons bought the property. So the generator is, again, per definition, the person whose act first causes the subject items to become subject to regulation, i.e. to become hazardous waste. So the prior owner of the property, Medford Plating, abandoned this property, as shown by the pictures and the City of Medford's own report. The Medford Plating, or the prior owner, is the generator. Our client is not the generator, and thus this does not apply. Now, they're hardly off scot-free. They've spent over $40,000 in remediation. Either way you look at it, they lose, and they've lost big. They shouldn't have to lose again by paying a fine. Legally, they shouldn't have to, and morally, they certainly shouldn't have to, because the damage has been done to them financially severely. If you find that unavailing, I want to address the penalties as discussed. So I've gone down the list and I looked at the factors myself. First off, the penalties. This penalty is based on my client being what's termed a large quantity generator. I think that we've already demonstrated that my client is not, in fact, a generator, whether small quantity, large quantity, or whatnot. So from the beginning, the state's position on how to fashion the penalty is critically flawed. So therefore, the formula calculation is off. The formula is based on 340-12-0140, and it says the first element is that under subsection little I, a person that is a large quantity generator or hazardous waste transporter. There's no allegation they're a hazardous waste transporter, so for that to apply, they have to be a large quantity generator. And again, we've demonstrated, I believe, that they're not a generator of any kind. And furthermore, I want to point out in the state's calculation here, it says that the base penalty is $12,000. Well, if you look at the administrative rule citation on Exhibit 1 of the state's complaint, as I'm going to call it, Exhibit 1 is the findings and determination of civil penalty. It says near the top, BP is the base penalty, which is $12,000. Listed in the matrix as 340-012-0140 2BAII, Roman numeral 2, little Roman numeral 2.
And if you look at that direct site in the administrative rules, it says that the base penalty is actually $6,000. So again, there's a flaw in there. $6,000 is highly preferable to $12,000, although I think legally my client's not responsible for any of it. Moving on down to the additional factors. On factor O, that's the number of days that the violation persisted, essentially. The administrative rule allows you to rank that from 1 to 4. And it says that each day is a recurring violation or a new violation. Well, that was ranked as a 4. So I'm going to, the rule is what it is. However, I find that 4 ranking to be highly arbitrary. In fact, with something of this magnitude, there's no way you could possibly cure this in the number of days allotted. I mean, you would have to cure it in 3 days and to arrange for laboratory testing, a consultant, someone to take samples, bring it over there, package it up, haul it off, get approved on a remediation plan from DEQ. It's simply impossible. That's an unattainable factor, and I think that I would ask that if you are assessing a penalty that you would use discretion in lowering that because it's arbitrary and unattainable, and it just absolutely accelerates that base penalty multiplier factor. I would also kind of analogize it to, you know, if you have a contract, oftentimes contracts say, you know, if one party's in breach, then they have 30 days to cure the breach, and then it usually says, unless the nature of the breach is of such type that it cannot reasonably be cured in that period of time, that the cure period is extended so long as the breaching party is working diligently to cure the breach. So I'd ask that you would take that into consideration. Mental state, there was a number 2 given stating that the rule states that that's when the offender reasonably or the alleged offender reasonably should have known of the quote requirement. So looking back at the real estate agreement, it did state there's some hazardous materials, but it doesn't inform anybody of the quote requirements. In fact, the requirements are very complicated. First off, I mean, I have to go back and forth juggling ORS with OAR with CFR. And then it takes consultants to determine what this is. A laboratory even responded to Ms. Curtin and said, we don't have a what is it machine. So the requirement itself is an overly simplistic way to define this. It's a multitude of requirements. And, you know, to state that you should know exactly what you're getting into ahead of time just because it had that one line in the sale agreement, I think, is assuming too much. With regard to mitigation, in C, it was a -3. We'd argue for a -5 because that -5 requires extraordinary efforts. I think the efforts were extraordinary in terms of cost. They had to borrow money. They spent countless hours. They had to spend over $40,000. To me, that's extraordinary. If I had to come up with that kind of money and devote the next 2 years of my life to it, I'd say that that would take an extraordinary effort for most people, and I think that was Ms. Curtin's testimony. And I'd say that it also says that you have to take extraordinary efforts that it won't be repeated. So I'm not sure the, you know, typical situation in which that would take place, but I would imagine it would be where you have a going business that's continuing to operate, and they, you know, perhaps install some type of you know, redundancy to prevent spillage or leakage or something like that at great expense, and that would perhaps be an extraordinary effort. In this case, I think we have a different kind of extraordinary effort to make sure it won't happen again, and that's this kind of business is not operating anymore. It wasn't operating prior to my client's acquisition of it, and it's never going to operate again as such. There is absolutely zero risk of this happening again because this business is gone. I don't think you can find any better assurance than that anywhere.
state has, I also want to go back to something. I want to go back to Mr. Lobato's testimony. I think the state's, you know, the state clearly was trying to prove that our client was a generator here, and Mr. Lobato testified that he sent a letter. His testimony was pretty vague, I thought. Sent a letter to the prior owner, in his words, right around the same time as the enforcement letter was sent to General Property Group, and a vague determination that the response was that the property was still being used on some kind of vague part-time basis for use of the plating business. Therefore, it didn't spring into jurisdiction as hazardous waste. I think that was the whole point of that testimony, although I would view that with some suspicion, because if that's the crux of the case, then why was there not any testimony or evidence that the property was being used as such until right before our clients bought the property? I think Mr. Lobato testified that it was being used as a business right up until that time, but there's no evidence in the record to back that up, even though there was allegedly some correspondence between him and the prior owner. And that is also highly inconsistent both with the City of Medford's information that was submitted that really got this all started, stating that this closed in 2014. It's highly inconsistent with Ms. Curtin's testimony of the way the property looked in April of 2015. And it's highly inconsistent with common sense when you look at the photos from the site inspection. Anybody who looks at that would say no one has been doing anything here for a long time. Finally, I looked at the goals of enforcement, the enforcement policy of DEQ 340-012-0026. Goals of enforcement are to protect the public health and the environment, obtain and maintain compliance with applicable environmental statutes and DEQ rules, permits, and orders, and deter future violators and violations. I think all of these goals are accomplished without further penalty to my client. Even if they'd commissioned someone right after closing, they still would not have been able to get everything cleaned up and out of there and approved in 90 days. So, you know, if this is the state's position to go after enforcement on this, it would have been bound to happen no matter what. If the state still wants to hold someone accountable for this, they can go after the generator being Medford Plating. So my client shouldn't be left holding the bag for a prior business's bad acts and abandoning this stuff and just wanting to get the heck out of Dodge because they don't want to deal with their failing business. And what I'm assuming is their failed business in Medford when the guy lives in, I think, Bend or Redmond, as Mr. Lobato testified. Another item, you know, there was about a month between DEQ correspondence with General Property Group and when the inspection took place on site. I don't think that my client should be rewarded for not breaking the law, but there are a lot of people out there, if they think they're in trouble for something, they'd probably just take that stuff out in the middle of the night and dump it somewhere. They didn't do that. They stood up for, you know, what was there. They cleaned it. They cooperated. There were some delays, but those delays were mostly the result of exorbitant costs and doing like normal people would do and try to get the best deal possible, all while trying to balance, you know, the pressure that they're receiving from the enforcement arm of DEQ. So the state has the burden of proof. I think the state has failed to meet it as a matter of law. And even if you find otherwise, there are major problems with how the penalty was calculated. There are major evidentiary problems with claiming that our client was a generator and basically ignoring the fact that the property was abandoned prior. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Final word, Ms. Elworth?
Yes. I just want to clarify that ORS 466.095 sub 1 prohibits anyone from storing hazardous waste unless they have a permit or they are a generator. And so the general property group is arguing they are not a generator. If that was the case, then they did not receive the 90-day period to store that hazardous waste. They would have been storing the hazardous waste at the time they purchased the property. But, you know, general property group argues that they are not the generator because the chemicals were not being stored at the time that Ms. Curtin did a visit to the property in April of 2015, I believe. She testified that she has pictures that show that the property was in essentially the same condition as Mr. Lobato's visit in August of 2016. Yet none of those pictures are in the record. There's nothing to support her testimony of that. Alternatively, DEQ has testified that the prior property owner told that he was maintaining those chemicals because he, as he had previously done, intended to sell the property along with the business at the property. So ultimately it comes down to a balancing of whether, you know, whose testimony is more credible in the particular hearing of whether or not General Property Group was the generator of the waste. If they weren't the generator of the waste, then 466.095 prohibits them from storing that waste outright. I have no other, nothing else.
Okay. Well, thank you on both sides, and I will begin working on this right away. So, Mr. Bartholomew, you are going to, whatever that packet of documents was that you and Ms. Elworth agreed upon, you're going to email those to us so that we can put them in CMS, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Perfect. Okay. The record will close once I have those documents in, which will hopefully be today or no later than tomorrow, and I will get my order out as quickly as I can. Thank you all. We are adjourned. Have a good day.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye. Your host is